Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute, and this is Sell or Die, a show all about discussing the real world of sales. No bullshit, no tricks, just how to make sales on the street, whether you're in New York or New Delhi.
And we call it Sell or Die because you're either selling or you're dying, and there's very little in between other than you're getting fired.
We're interviewing the
By the way, you're dead. Thanks for not trying hard enough. Thanks for blaming everybody else for your shit.
What's the quota when you're dead?
The quota when you're dead is unemployment. And you can thank our president for upping that by about 40% during his 8 years. Not that I'm going
to. All right,
take
so back to our show. We're interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development. And most important of all, we want to hear from you. So if you have questions for us, tweet us at Gittimer or at Jen in a New York Minute or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gittimer.
Which we're on right now live video.
Hey, or facebook.com/Jen in a New York Minute.
Is it /Gittimer or /Jeffrey Gittimer?
I think it's slash Gittimer.
Jeffrey Gittimer.
Oh.
Well, either way.
Well, just search for Jeffrey Gittimer. You can find him easily. Yeah. And use the hashtag sell or die.
And this is unscripted.
Totally unscripted. Or if you're listening live, you can give us a call, 646-668-8876.
What's that again?
646-668-8876. If you call, you'll get to speak with our wonderful producer and voice of the common customer, Doug. Hi, Doug.
Hello to both of you. Just a reminder to listeners out there, you can listen to us live Wednesdays at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. Subscribe to us on iTunes or any of the popular podcast apps. Just search Sell or Die and have episodes downloaded to your computer or mobile device of choice. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Well, we're about to go to this sales hacker thing, but I think we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
We'll be in New York City next week for anybody that wants to hang around, you know, the World Trade Center or the cow. Oh, wait, it's a bull.
It's a bull.
How do you know the difference?
The charging bull.
Huh? How do you know? Oh, one has horns.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so we'll be around there in Lower Manhattan.
And you have a free webinar next week, Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Big free webinar next week about the master principles of selling, which I think are very important. I've got 10.5 of them. And this will be a webinar that costs zero. And you can log on. There'll be thousands of people. We have thousands of registrants already.
Mm-hmm. Actually, two are sold out.
Yeah, two of the time slots are already sold out. But you can get on. There's still plenty of time. Where do you go?
We'll get you that link.
Yeah, we'll get you that link in a little
bit. It's a long link.
It is a long link.
Well, there's an ad on our Blog Talk Radio page, blogtalkradio.com/sellordie, and you can get there from
Perfect.
There.
Good. Blogtalkradio.com/sellordie, all one word.
Talking about free stuff, I also have a networking ebook coming out next week that's free as well. 57 places to network and what you do when you get there.
57, like Heinz, 57
like
varieties?
Heinz, 57 cool. varieties.
Is one of them like a hamburger stand with ketchup? Okay. So we got a great show, and it's all about hacking. Hacking is one of those new words of selling. It's one of those buzzwords that nobody actually knows what it means, like added value. But so we're going to define it today in a way that I think you're going to find amazingly interesting. Joining us live in just a few minutes is Scott Hansen. He's the author of Success Hackers and the host of the Success Hacker podcast. He has interviewed a bunch of really cool people, some of the best minds in the world, including mine. And he'll reveal his best hacks to get your sales moving in the right direction.
Plus, have you ever wondered about the tools that may be out there?
I lose sleep about that.
I know, you lose sleep, I know. That there's tools out there that maybe you aren't using that can make your sales life easier. We talked to Max Altshuler, author of Hacking Sales and CEO of Sales Hacker, and he says yes. We talked about a few of those tools.
He's putting on the Sales Hacker show this week in Manhattan.
Yeah, the Sales Machine Summit.
Sales Machine Summit. He's amazing. He's a young man who's on the fly. So why don't we get to it? It's time to sell or die. Before we talk to anybody, though, I want to hear from you and answer some of your questions. We're going to go to our producer, Doug, who's got some questions from the sales warriors over there on reddit.com/r/sales. Douglas, who's, let me repeat that again, reddit.com/r/sales. So, Douglas, who is the first question from?
Yeah, it's a really great site. A lot of good resources, salespeople and sales managers helping each other. Our first question comes from, oh, and also, we haven't mentioned this yet, we're doing a post every Wednesday morning asking for people's questions. So definitely go there, subscribe, and ask us a question on our Wednesday morning post. Our first question comes from Cyber Rico. Cyber Rico asks, what is your take on using LinkedIn in mail as a means of prospecting, and what is the best way to approach it?
I'll start. You can chime in.
Go for it.
I think LinkedIn in mail is a great promotion for LinkedIn. I think they make a ton of money of it. I don't look at those in mails as anything more or anything less than what they are. It's a message to me. I don't go,
but
oh, my gosh.
It's a cold message. It's not just a message to you.
It's an in mail. I better answer this. I don't really give a shit what it is if it has no value. So if he's going to give a value message to somebody, then I might be interested in it. I'd be more interested in connecting with him if he posted something of value. But if you're going on LinkedIn to troll for leads and try to troll for prospects, you might as well cold call.
Yeah. Cold emailing is actually even more annoying than cold calling.
Well, whatever it is, it's annoying.
So I agree with you, Jeffrey. I don't use LinkedIn in mail. I'm not a fan of it. I only use it if I have a specific reason to get in touch with someone. And I feel that they would want to talk to me too. But I don't use it for sales prospecting because it's just cold. You don't know the person. I'd rather ask for an introduction, get a referral from someone else, and then talk to that person because someone else said that they know and I know that we should connect.
It sounds like somebody's boss said, instead of cold calling, why don't you try LinkedIn?
Exactly.
And gave him zero instruction. Yeah. And why don't you just Google cold calling on LinkedIn and find out how stupid it actually is?
Well, the worst is when people friend me on LinkedIn and try to connect with me and they say, like, we have synergies and we should connect. And then they say, and then 5 seconds after we connect, they send me an automated email or a message or whatever.
Stupid.
Trying
so
to sell
nice
me
to
something.
Connect with you on LinkedIn. Also, follow
here's
me on Facebook.
Here's what I offer. Nobody. Yeah. Here's what I offer. Why don't you buy this, this, and that? Yeah. Or let's talk about it.
Bullshit.
It's crazy.
Okay. So you know we're sponsored by Death Wish Coffee, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna
talk about that soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got one more question here from The Drawlin. The Drawlin says that they're in digital marketing for residential home improvement contractors. He says, my company schedules meetings and virtual meetings with the contractors, but because it's the busy season for contractors, they end up canceling a lot of these meetings.
Seriously?
Yeah, we've talked about something for them to have some skin in the game, such as a deposit of some sorts that they can get back as a rebate. What would you recommend to help lock these appointments in so that these business owners will want to do the meeting rather than miss out on making some money?
Yeah. I think that the best thing to do is to establish a pool of people that are willing to make calls and get a bunch of testimonials together from the people that are making the calls and making the money or that are entering into the contracts and making the money. The Drowlin, by the way, which is a pretty interesting name. Most people that are in digital marketing are hoping to do all things digitally and don't want to pick the phone up. And so I would challenge them to pick the phone up to confirm, and that way they'll have less cancels.
I like that.
Because what they do is they send a confirmation email, and they go, well, I sent them an email.
I would send them a calendar invite.
Okay.
I would call too,
yeah.
But I would make sure it's on their calendar.
I always click maybe. That way it keeps people guessing. They're going to be there or not. So
got one more from Keep Coming Back. Keep Coming Back wants to know how you two, Jeffrey and Jennifer, keep track of your personal leads. Also, do you have a CRM system that your team uses? I'm mostly curious how you two track and prioritize your own schedule.
Really, this is none of your business, what we do. But Jenny will talk to you about how we do this.
So we just started using HubSpot, and they have a sales CRM that's unbelievable. I can, with one click, literally send someone an email that said that's response to them wanting to schedule time. And I just say, click here to schedule it. And it has my calendar. And then they click on it. They schedule it. It emails us both a confirmation. We also keep track of all of our leads within HubSpot. And they have a really robust CRM. It's incredible what they've built.
They are trying to usurp some of the other people that are in the CRM business, the Salesforces and the Microsoft Dynamics of the world. And they're taking a stab at it because they got plenty of money and plenty of resource.
Yeah.
They're also an email company that actually lands the email. And they have software that identifies everybody that just read your email 2 seconds ago. And you can literally call them while you're while they're reading your proposal. It's a little frightening.
It is. Sometimes I'm sitting across from you and I see you've opened my email and I just laugh. Oh, he's reading my email now.
Okay. That's where we're at on that.
They have a free part. The HubSpot CRM has a free part and a paid part. So you should try the free part out. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
While we work on getting Scott, I got one more question for you from Reddit. Work for Bacon wants some advice for transferring across industries while staying in sales. They're currently selling BMWs and would like to move to a little higher ticket item with a longer sales cycle, less churning of customers, and more focused effort on specific opportunities. How would you approach this?
First of all, customers churn because you suck. Customers churn.
Or your service sucks.
Yeah, or something sucks about you. Second of all, if you want a higher ticket item, you can either A, sell them two BMWs, or B, start to sell homes.
Or planes.
Or mobile homes. But either way, you're still going to have people that you can keep. So what I would do is self-evaluate, how's my service right now? Why are my customers going away from me? And, you know, you're selling one of the best cars on the planet in a BMW, so...
They don't even need to self-evaluate. They could take the sales assessment.
And nobody comes back and goes, hey, this car is a piece of crap. You know, I want a Toyota. What they're doing is they're buying the best car on the planet. And for some reason, your service is lacking. Therefore, they churn.
I left BMW.
You did?
Yeah, I did. Because I was not happy with their service. Hmm. I loved the car. Hmm. In fact, I thought I'd never get another car besides a BMW car again. And now I'll never go back. Next up, he's been waiting patiently on the soon-to-be-sponsored Sell or Die hotline. He knows a lot about hacking. He's the author of Success Hackers and host of Success Hackers podcast, Scott Hansen.
He's one hell of a hacker. So what are the qualities that you need? What are the – give me some specifics of things that I need to be a successful hacker.
Well, I think you have to know yourself. I know that sounds so cliche and so obvious, but I think a lot of people that I coach through my high performance coaching is they don't really know who they are and who they serve. So first and foremost, get crystal clear on who you are and the marketplace that you serve. You can't serve everything to everybody. So dominate your one niche and then you can expand from there. Number one. And then number two is just, I think a lot of it is a mindset play, you know, rather than being middle of the pack, you know, rather than just competing, say, how do I get out in front of everybody? How do I, why are people going to be drawn to me? Why am I going to attract the right people into my space? And it's, you know, it's as simple as the law of attraction or the law of vibration. You know, it's what you're putting out is going to come back to you. So if you think, for example, you're only worth a $500 price point or a $500 service or whatever it is that you sell, why not double or triple that? I mean, it's the value you bring to people. I think too many people from a price standpoint look at it and say, well, I can only serve them and I can only offer them X. Well, the reality of it is it's not that they're buying the product or service. It's they're buying the results that your product and services perform and transform them. So that's why I say price is relative to value that you bring ultimately.
So the old days, people compared the hacker in the department store business was Nordstrom. They would refund your money for things that they didn't even sell.
Tires.
Yeah, whatever the deal was. But they are also very service-oriented. I had a couple of amazing experiences there. They were the company that sort of set the standard for service as a department store. But today, the standard bearer would be Amazon. As a total, they have hacked every business on the planet. You go into a furniture store, and the first thing you do is take your phone out and see if Amazon sells it cheaper or better. You go into a bookstore, they totally dominate the book industry. they are beginning to dominate the record industry. They're crazy. Anything you want to buy, you can buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah.
And but you also have to look at companies like Uber that have come in and literally taken over the taxi industry to a point where the taxi industry was caught totally off guard, and now they can't even stand up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to introduce a feeble app. Like, no one's going to ever use a taxi cab app on the planet. They'll just go out in the street and try to hail one. But how many times have you used your Uber app, Scott?
About 2 to 3 times a day.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone does.
I think that Juno might be the new competitor to Uber. They have these things now, the Uber drivers, right next to their Uber phone. They have a second phone that says, join Juno, 35% off your rides. And it just sits there, so everyone's riding around with that. I want to know more. I want to try it.
So the driver will now be the driver.
Right.
They will figure out whether they want to go Juno or Lyft or Uber.
Exactly.
And then, and then they're going to start to say, well, if you sign with us, you have to stay loyal to us. They're going to try to do all kinds of crap. But meanwhile, it will be the person who has the car that will make the rules. And it used to be the taxi cab company that made the rules and say, yeah, are you on shift one or shift two? And you drove
it's unbelievable.
Pardon?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And to your point, I mean, I remember sitting in a taxi cab about 2 years ago, and a guy from, I forgot what country he was from, he's like, me and my brother had been saving up for 2 years, and the medallion that sits on one of these cabs here in Chicago is now worth $450,000. There's $750,000 in New York. It was $200,000 just 2 years ago. So we know at $400,000, it's a steal because we know where the marketplace is going. Within 2 years, to your point, Uber comes along and wipes that all out.
Completely.
It's heartbreaking to know people who
really
own medallions.
Is.
So, but Scott,
listen,
do you think—
No. Hang on a second. It was a false price. And it was put on by the medallion people that kept on putting them in short supply. It was a supply and demand thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, they kind of deserve what they got. They created a false bubble. They should have made those medallions $100,000 a pop. They would have maintained their value, and you know, now there's more Uber drivers than there are taxi drivers.
Or if they're going to charge that much money for it, don't give crappy service and dirty cars. And anyway, so Scott, do you think there's one success hack that people should do before any other, sort of like a foundational success hack?
I mean, that's a, you know, that's a big question. We probably don't have enough time for all of it, but I
well, give us
a
short version. Give us the Uber version.
The Uber version of the success hack. You know, listen, I think that, you know, without getting too foo-foo-y, life is short. And if you're not following your purpose and your passion for what you truly is your calling to do, and you're just going after the money, that ain't going to last. So I know that's not a, that's not the sexy success hack and what business owners should do right away. But I think first and foremost, I think too many people chase the dollar. I know I did. When I did that, it didn't get me very far. So stay with your calling and dominate your space. Secondly, go ahead.
No, I wanted to just tell you, I try to help other speakers. And one day a speaker called me up on the phone from Charlotte and wanted to have a lunch. And I go, oh, sure, fine. Because guys have been very kind to me. And we sit down for lunch and he goes, where's the money in the speaking business? And I said, well, I don't really – first of all, I've never been asked that question. Second of all, I don't really know. What I did is I found something that I loved, which was sales and service and loyalty, and I decided I want to become the best at it in the world, and I just dedicated myself to that task. And he said, but where's the money? So I just checked them off on my – you know, you check a person off mentally. I bought his lunch, and I will never take his call again.
Did you tell him to start out Jeffrey at the chamber?
Actually, you know, listen, here's a couple of things you can do. But in my mind, I'm going, you fucking idiot. You know, I don't want to. Anyhow, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no. And again, and then the, kind of the second piece to that, besides following your calling, your passion, and then, but I think setting a 10X goal. You know, it's too easy to play kind of down the middle and safe and comfortable. Life is too precious and too short. And why not, you know, the old saying is, you know, thinking small and thinking big takes the same amount of effort. So think big, like go for it. Really get up there and swing. I was actually having someone on my podcast today. They said, listen, you know that, and Jeffrey can appreciate this, that in the Hall of Fame in baseball, a batter will only get 3 hits out of 10 at bats. And he's in the Hall of Fame.
Correct. If he does it for 20 years, he goes down as one of the greatest hitters of all time.
That's right.
Mike Schmidt.
That's right. Ah, Phillies reference. I knew he was going to get one in there.
Wait, are there other teams in the other teams?
Oh, are the Cubs on tonight? Are the Cubs playing?
The Cubs are kicking the shit out of everybody. It's classic. All of a sudden, but you know what? It's not July yet. Why don't you tell me? Because the Cubbies are always the hottest team in baseball until July.
Oh man, this is a whole nother podcast. I love it.
So going back to success hacks.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And success balls. How about that?
That's the three of our next podcast.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Story. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Scott, you're online, you're podcasting. How can people use social media to success hack?
Well, again, I think first of all, you got to know your niche. You got to know where you're playing, and you got to know where your customers and prospects and people are hanging out. Once you kind of get that, because people say to me all the time, Scott, should I be on Periscope? Should I be on Blab? Should I be on LinkedIn, Facebook? I said, no, you shouldn't. Not right now. You got to, quit chasing the shiny object syndrome and focus on one or two things. You know, whether that's for you, that's Twitter. Dominate Twitter. Get great at Twitter. Dominate Periscope. You know, be consistent. I think the key to that is consistency, right? So you can't expect to have a million followers on YouTube in 3 months. You got to stay with it for a while. And whether that's YouTube, whether that's whatever, but then dominate it. Be all things to all people in your world. And for me, and what I did was I knew that becoming a coach and a marketing strategist and a sales coach and a business coach and all that, that what I do, I knew that there's a lot of people in that space. So I said to myself, how do I stand out? So number one, I got a chance to become a contributor at entrepreneur.com. I now have one of the fastest growing entrepreneurial podcasts. I have a coaching company and I speak and all those other things. I knew I had to separate myself from everybody else that did what I did so that when I got up, there was an authority behind me. And because of those things, because I built that now continues to flower because of that. So I think you got to think a little bit differently. You can't just expect to have great results if you're just going to do one thing, not in today's society.
Do you have a book that goes along with it?
Do I have a book?
Yeah.
I do have a book, and the book is also called Success Hackers, interestingly enough. And the book hit Amazon bestseller list in 3 different business categories within 2 weeks that it came out. So all those things kind of position, I call it the authoritative positioning, right? What can you do today so you can start standing apart from everybody else that does what you do? And it's not, as Jeffrey knows, it's not hard. Jeffrey's in a different world. I mean, he's on a different planet with his books. But for the rest of us right now, just getting your name out there to people, and even if it's on Amazon, and creating some momentum and some followership is the key in the beginning.
Scott, buddy, I want to thank you very much for being on our Sell or Die podcast. You can find Scott Hansen on Twitter at ScottHansen1210. And online at successhackers.net. Did I say that right, Scott?
You did. You absolutely did.
Cool. I want to thank you very much for being on this. We're going to be hacking our way through this entire show because we've got Max Altshuler on after you, the sales hacker guy. And
perfect.
But you have created a real good atmosphere for us to begin the show, and I totally appreciate your time.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Okay. Howdy, howdy. Go Phillies. So before we get to our next guest, I want to tell you that we have teamed up with our friends. And this is an amazing guy. Mike Brown, he lives in the woods and he makes coffee. And he won a contest for the Super Bowl to get a 1 minute commercial in the Super Bowl. His coffee is Death Wish Coffee. And let me tell you something. It rocks. If you want to stay awake for a week, Death Wish Coffee is up for the game. Yeah, but up all week, George Carlin. The coffee in this thing is very strong, very, very, very strong, but it's damn good. Death Wish Coffee, and I think it's deathwishcoffee.com.
Yeah, it is. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. We're drinking it right now. Cheers, Jeffrey.
Yeah, cheers to you, Jenny.
Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
Cool. And get a bunch of it. Don't get like one chicken pound. Get a bunch.
Let's get back to our show. Topic for this
week. Sponsored by Death Wish Coffee.
Right. Topic for this week, sales hacking. Earlier today, we talked with Max Altshuler, author of Hacking Sales and CEO of SalesHacker.com. He says we're in the midst of a post-email sales revolution. Take a listen.
So welcome, Max, to Sell or Die. Before we begin the in-depth piece, can you please define for everyone listening, including me, what is sales hacking?
Yeah, so sales hacking is something we came up with about, I think it's like 3 or 4 years now, but it's generating more revenue using less resources. And that could be done in a lot of different ways. You know, that could be technological, that could be psychological, that could be human capital. So using virtual assistants in the Philippines to do kind of some of your more manual work. That could be financial. So, you know, how do you kind of cut corners on the right things and decide, you know, what to spend, you know, allocate budget on and what not to. You know, so there's a lot of different things you can do to kind of hack your sales process. And in the past few years, between the boom in technology and the rise of these startups and, you know, just the spread of knowledge, we've been able to do a lot more than ever before in the sales process. And this is kind of like an enhancement era that we're in. So that is really what, you know, sales hacking is.
So let me give you the old man's version of it. When I was selling in New York City, I only called on CEOs, thereby getting rid of every single human being in my path. And the CEO goes downstairs and tells other people what to do, thereby hacking them at the knees, and they have nothing to do. They have to go, yes, boss.
Exactly.
And I made...
You're the highest person. That's a great
right.
top-down approach.
Exactly. So I made literally millions of dollars worth of sales by only talking to CEOs or people that could actually pull the trigger.
Yeah, and then when they tell their, you know, their employee, hey, you got to talk to this person, even if, you know, if the employee doesn't have that context, and it's like, this person just cold emailed me, you're in charge of this product value, you talk to them. But what they are really getting is, you know, my boss just told me I need to talk to you. You know, so that works. That works really well. And they don't understand, sometimes the context isn't delivered. So they don't know that it was a cold outreach and that, you know, they're just getting it off their plate. They think that, oh, hey, my CEO told us to connect. This must be important.
So Max, tell our listeners, how do you become a sales hacker? What do you have to do?
Yeah, it's not anything that you have to necessarily do. It's just a dedication really to finding the best ways to do things instead of saying, you know, this is how we've always done it. You know, maybe take a look at the technology that's available to you now and say, okay, well, this piece of technology automates something that, you know, my reps have been doing that is a mundane task that they shouldn't be doing. They can spend more time selling and less time logging, you know, stuff into Salesforce, and this automatically pulls it in. Or this keeps them 10 times more organized so they can stay 10 times more focused so they can actually spend their time selling instead of doing, you know, these menial tasks.
Can we stop for just a minute and talk about you?
Yeah, sure.
So how'd you get started in this? What got you rolling?
I joined a company called Udemy, which is an online education marketplace. In 2011. And I've always taken a very entrepreneurial approach to this. So I was the first sales guy and I built out the supply side of their marketplace. And it wasn't, it was a sales role, but it was an entrepreneurial role. So when you have a marketplace like that, you're building two businesses at once, the supply side and the demand side. And so I was tasked with building the supply side and came at it from a very, just like, what if I didn't know anything about sales and I came at this completely from scratch, what would we do? And, you know, started using virtual assistants, started using some of the brand new technologies that were available to me, and kind of just hacked it together from a, you know, let's toy with this thing standpoint. And, you know, I grew up and my favorite thing to do outside of playing hockey was doing was building Lego sets when I was little. And
did you ever hear about? Wait. You know, what about girls?
Yeah.
Girls? Were they in the mix?
That came a little bit later. I mean, it was like Lego sets were like elementary and middle
school. Okay.
Kind of phased out.
I got you.
But yeah, I mean, but you know. You have to figure them out too. That's a whole other mystery.
You know what? It doesn't come with an instruction
book.
There's no
hacking for that.
You're either screwed or you're screwed.
Yeah, I don't like using the instructions. I kind of don't go by the book.
Right.
So.
I was always a braille guy myself.
There you go. How did it work out for you?
Pretty good, actually. No? Yeah, pretty good.
good. Yeah, I mean. The Lego stuff really, obviously, I didn't like using the instructions. I kind of just, you know, it was like, oh, let's see if I can build it if I don't use the instructions. And I was pretty good at it. And so, I don't know, I've always looked at things as, you know, let's pretend there are no rules and there's no guidebook. You know, what can we do from scratch here? What would we do? And what we ended up building was, you know, kind of a, you know, Aaron Ross's predictable revenue stuff. I read that book like 6 months after I got the job at Udemy, and I was like, damn, well, I probably should have read this 6 months ago. It might have helped a lot. But we did a lot of the same stuff, except I injected technology and virtual assistants into the process in a way where the entire thing that he developed, we basically automated or semi-automated. And it worked really well for us. And I ended up kind of loosely advising a bunch of other marketplaces, and then went over to a company called Attorney Fee, where I was the VP of Business Development, managed both sides of the marketplace. We sold to LegalZoom, and then after that started Sales Hacker, really because we had a meetup that we were doing and people were really interested in it. So I started the first conference, did really well financially on it, had 300 people there, and thought, people want this. Let's keep going with this.
How do you stay current on all the tools that are out there?
I love it. I'm just passionate about it and it's fun. And, you know, fortunately with Sales Hacker, we get access to everybody that's building. They want to come to us first because they want access to our audience who is buying. You know, we work with the sellers and we like to call ourselves the next generation of sales. I mean that, you know, kind of in two different ways. One, the next generation of sales is obviously deeply rooted in technology. And, you know, that's kind of what we focus a lot on. But also the next generation of sales is the sales force itself. You know, things are changing. The millennials and the Gen Z guys are going into the workforce right now. And, they're the next generation. They're the people who are, going to be using these tools, who are going to be the future directors and VPs, you know, in the next wave. And, it's a cycle, you know, just like the generation before it came in and did things their way. You know, this is how they're going to sell.
All right. So it's clear that you're totally passionate about all these tools because there's so many great resources and recommendations for salespeople stuffed into your book. How much of sales hacking is simply knowing the tools that are available to you to make your sales life easier?
Yeah. I mean, discovery is a small fraction of the battle. But, you know, a quick Google search can give you, you know, a treasure trove of information. It's really about understanding where it fits into your process and how to use it. And so, you know, if you are, you know, let's take, for example, you know, the first touch with a prospect. So if you don't know that you need to do research before you do that, you're already a fool and you're already, you know, you're already screwed. If you do know you need to do research, you can go out and do 3 seconds worth of research or 30 minutes worth of research. If you do 3 seconds worth of research, you're probably also screwed. If you do 30 minutes, you might be very well prepared, but you just wasted 30 minutes. So if you can find a tool, you know, like a tool like Charlie App that aggregates all that for you, then you basically have 30 minutes worth of research aggregated already, and you can spend that 3 seconds. So instead of spending the 30 minutes, you spend the 3 seconds. You get 30 minutes worth of info, and you get all that time back, plus you're very well prepared for that meeting.
We spoke to the Charlie App guy, and we love that app. Mm-hmm. We use it all the time.
I mean, it's great. I use that with a mix of, I pay a virtual assistant in the Philippines $800 a month. They're fantastic. They can do anything, you know, most Americans can do, and it's $800 a month, and it's all online, so it's not, you know, I don't have them do phone calls or anything like that, but they go out and gather a ton of information for me, and they'll go out and I'll do a Charlie app, you know, little dossier on, you know, who I'm talking to. And then I have them go and do a little bit extra manual research, on top of that. And, you know, for me, I can just do a quick look over and know that all my bases have been covered and I'm ready for that meeting.
I heard you say on another podcast that technology has transformed selling into science as well as an art. How much of sales hacking addresses the science of selling and how much addresses the art?
So we have this conversation all the time, and it's efficiency versus effectiveness. So technology versus training. So the art is the training side. The art is, you know, you can have all the technology in the world, but if you don't know how to use it, you don't know how to sell, you're wasting your money. You're investing all that money in this technology and you're getting nothing out of it.
So no, you're a loser. Max,
yeah,
you're a loser.
It's equally important.
Right.
Yeah, you're losing money. You're losing everything. I mean, you're losing time, you're losing money. And it's pretty much the surefire way to, you know, lose your company, lose your job, if you're not investing in that side. On the data side, on the science side, yeah, it's pretty interesting. A lot of this technology has made things a lot easier to track than ever before. For example, you can now see how long somebody spent on, you know, a proposal you sent them, what page they're looking at, and how long they spent looking at that page. I mean, there's some data that you can get from your sales process that you were never able to use in the past because you couldn't capture that data. You didn't have that visibility and that transparency into your deals that you have now. And so if you can take advantage of that, I mean, I equate it to, you know, this is the enhancement era. So we went through what, you know, there was face-to-face meetings when, you know, dinosaurs roamed the earth or whatever. When you didn't have a phone, you did face-to-face. And when the phone was invented, you picked up the phone. And when email was invented, you started using email. And now we're in this era where all these tools are enhancing those three core things, face-to-face, phone, and email. And if you don't take advantage of this new technology, it's basically not taking advantage of the phone when the phone was invented. Over the past 3-4 years, so much investment has gone into building products and technologies for salespeople to make their jobs better. And not taking advantage of that, putting yourself at a supreme disadvantage.
This is a pretty big week for you. You're preparing for a major event next week.
So we've partnered with Salesforce on an event called Sales Machine. We'll probably have about 1,500 to 2,000 people at this event. And, you know, it should be an amazing networking opportunity. Obviously, the speakers we have on stage, you know, major keynotes in Gary Vaynerchuk, Seth Godin, Simon Sinek, Frederick Eklund, Billy Bean, Ariana Huffington.
I'm sold. Where do
yeah,
I sign
I know.
Up?
Yeah, how do I get there?
SalesMachineSummit.com. Go quickly because tickets are going fast. And New York City, Pier 94, June 15th and 16th.
You can buy Max's book, Hacking Sales, right now and visit saleshacker.com for more information about Sales Machine, New York City, 16. Jeffrey and I will be there.
Yeah, we're going. Yeah, so I'll be in the back row. I always sit in the back row wherever I go. Unless in the old days when I would go to seminar events, I would try to sit in the front row. Like for Jim Rohn, I would sit weekends at a time in the front row next to Darren Hardy.
So now you sit in the back in case
I sit in the
suck.
Back because I'm whole. I hold
sneak
court.
Out.
I hold court.
You would camp out there the whole weekend in the front row.
Yeah,
no one told you, hey, get out of here, buddy.
No.
Did you heckle him?
No, you don't heckle people. You take notes like a madman.
All right, just checking.
So that was an extremely interesting interview with Matt. Max. He's definitely a proponent of tech and virtual assistants in sales. So guys, where does the human element fit into all of this?
The human element comes in my opinion, when you want to actually make the sale. You can lead up to the sale technically, but somewhere there has to be a human interaction unless you're going to just Amazon.com it and go complete tech where they don't want to talk to you. eBay doesn't want to talk to you. They make billions of dollars worth of sales, but the guy who's selling a car, you know, unless you're buying a Tesla, you got to go to the car dealership.
I agree.
But more and more things are going to where people just buy it online and they're done with it.
Yeah, but a lot of sales are relationship-based, and you can do a lot of this hacking stuff to prep for your meeting, to get information about who you're going to meet with, to prospect, to get new leads through hacking mechanisms. But when it comes down to it, I agree. You have to meet with the person, sit face-to-face, talk to them.
I would rather hack the sales process and just meet with the CEO and hack my way down from there. It's like it's a hack of a lot easier. But listen, there's a place for this. And the place for this is where our society is evolving to and where sales are evolving to. The smartphone is now the key to connecting. And the salesperson stays connected with their smartphone. It is literally, you might as well be born with one that's attached to you. They sew
You're
it
not?
In your, huh? No, I keep mine in my back pocket. But if it's ever 3 feet away, A, it doesn't record my Fitbit steps. And B, I want to make sure that I have complete access to my life. Yeah. Your life is now in your phone. So I can train myself. I can Google people. I can do, you know, there's all kinds of stuff I can do. But there still has to be that interaction, especially B2B. There has to be that sit down, even if you're talking to some guy in a purchasing department or a procurement department, they still want to know who they're doing business with. And when you're, you know the old cartoon, you know, with the dog at the keyboard, when you're on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And you have to look at this from the perspective of, I want to meet that person that I'm mm-hmm. doing business with. I want to, mm-hmm. you know who I am, or at least talk to them on the phone. So
especially when something goes wrong, you right. want a person.
Well, that exactly. The hack is the ability to get the information, get the inside process, get the ball rolling, and then the salesperson has to take over. You can't just do it by hacking it with research. Eventually, you have to do it by closing the sale.
Yeah. So next week, sales machine, that's the place to be.
Yeah. If you're not there, you're square.
Max, I think he kind of hit on it, hit the nail on the head in that interview when he said that, you know, a lot of these sales hacks surround doing away with menial tasks. And I think that's the danger, is if you try to replace things that go beyond menial tasks and try to replace things that really are at the heart of the sale. I think that's where
exactly
that's where it seems like you get into trouble. But there's another thing. He didn't say this, and I don't know if it's written down specifically in his book maybe somewhere, but he talks a lot about this idea that sales, and technology does this to a lot of different things, but it's doing it to sales right now, and it's democratizing it. It's making sales easier for entrepreneurs and tech people and people that may not be salesy. They can do sales because of some of these applications. What do you yeah. think about that?
Right. It opened up the marketplace for shitty salespeople to come in.
Well, they have to listen to the show.
Right.
Yeah, but in before all these hacks, to start a business, you needed all these people, all this, like a lot of help from different people.
Right.
And that was costly. Now the barrier to entry is lower because you can get VAs online. You can get like virtual assistants online. You can get all this help from these different hacks that's much less costly than hiring full-time people, staff yeah. to help.
No argument with that. You can do it on a shoestring.
Exactly.
Or you can bootstrap it.
Exactly.
And you can still make sales. You can go out in New York City, bang on doors, and have a whole bevy of people behind you that are totally contracted mm-hmm. or contracted mm-hmm. and pay them as you go, and a much, much lower fee, even if, you know, because you can go, quote, offshore, which means someplace where they don't, you know, there's billions of people that are willing to work for nothing.
But also it's no headache. If they're not working out, you just say peace out.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah. That, you know?
You could just say peace out. That's a phrase I grew up with.
So it works, I think, or can work for people who are entering the industry now. And I think probably yeah. the younger segment more than the older segment,
yeah.
people who have been used to apps. But what about people, what about salespeople who are already established, they're already making a lot of money, and they've got their systems down? Should they explore some of these app alternatives to menial tasks, or should they just stay in their groove?
They can stay in their groove for a short period of time, but eventually they will lose their groove to a guy that can do it better, faster.
So the interesting, I agree, the interesting thing that Max said was not using these sales hack tools is like not using the phone when the phone came out.
Yeah. Or not listening to the radio to find out where the weather was coming from. I mean,
yeah.
you at some point, the established sales guy will be forced to use these hacking techniques because he or she will be wasting their time while somebody else is scrambling and beating them to the punch every single time,
mm-hmm.
or beating them to the sale every single time. The online community grows exponentially every year, and more salespeople lose their jobs every year from technology. And there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, at some point, General Motors will put in the buy now button. And when they put the buy now button in, how many car salespeople do you think will lose their jobs in an hour?
A lot.
Answer, every single one of them. And I mean, the reason it'll take them an hour is they have to gather up their pictures and shit from their desks and then
pack
get
up
out
their
the door.
Boxes.
Right. They've been pissing people off for 100 years.
They have.
It's enough.
They have.
So all these companies are secretly trying to figure out ways. The drug companies have just done it. They've eliminated thousands of salespeople because they know the doctor's going to prescribe the drug anyway. And the government came in and made all these laws that says you can't take the guy out to lunch anymore. So it's salespeople are slowly but surely having to figure out new ways to get a great sales job to make a great living.
All right, we have one more guest before we go. I've really liked all of this sales hacking talk, but we have to discuss something that's far more important, and that's the NBA Finals. Important because Jeffrey and I have a lunch bet on who will win.
Bite me. and by saying bite
and
me, guess who
that's
I'm...
That's something you grew up with, too, that
yeah,
phrase.
That we, bite me is an original phrase from Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah, it comes with soft pretzels and, anyway, steak sandwiches, but which you erroneously call Philly steak sandwiches. They're called cheesesteaks because when you're in Philly, it's just a cheesesteak. It's not a Philly cheesesteak because you're in Philly.
Right. Well, Jeffrey, you're saying bite me because it looks like you're going to have to buy me a cheesesteak.
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
I have my money on Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, who are up 2-0 in the series right now. Steph Curry is the hottest commodity in the NBA right now, and most people would assume he's selling shoes and apparel for Nike because Nike's number one. They're number one in the game.
Right.
But amazingly, he's been an Under Armour guy since 2013. We spoke with Russ Heddleston, CEO of DocSend, who wrote about the incredible story of Nike missing the mark on their sales pitch to Steph Curry and losing $14 billion in the process.
That's billion with a B.
Started off with Nike thinking they had it in the bag because they were already working with Steph Curry. He was performing pretty well for them, but they were focused on kind of the next up-and-comers, and he wasn't their top priority. So when they went back to re-up Steph Curry again, they were just sloppy. There's just no other way to describe it. They were sloppy, and they didn't do things as well as they should have done them, and there's no excuse for it. And it's not the first time that this has happened. Michael Jordan, everyone thinks of him being with Nike, but he was originally with Adidas. And Adidas lost that, and Michael Jordan went with Nike, and he made Nike. Like, what would Nike have been without Michael Jordan? And so Nike, yeah, it's like the next generation, Nike themselves is making this mistake with Steph.
Russ, in your piece, you detail step by step the mistakes that Nike made when pitching Steph Curry. What was the earliest mistake that Nike made in this process?
I mean, the first one is just knowing what motivated Steph and what he cared about. So if they really wanted to keep him involved in Nike, they should have known how into camps he was. And they should have asked him to run one of their camps. And they gave those opportunities to other prospects that they had. Know who you're selling to, know what they care about. And if there's someone you want to keep around, make sure you engage them on that topic.
They made a lot of missteps in this, but is there one, maybe two, that stick out in your mind as the biggest glaring flaws?
So in the deck they used to present, they put the wrong name and photo. Like that's just such a cringer. Like, oh, you flip to that page and you're like, great, Steph, we're so excited. And it's the wrong name and photo. Like that's just awful. They also mispronounced his name. So they didn't really even do their background. This is not clearly not people who were big fans of him or who had a relationship with him. So just like cringeworthy details that, gosh, just 5 minutes of time would have really saved them. And then the last one is just make him feel special. Know your audience. Make sure when you pitch Steph, you're in a spot where he's like, yeah, this is in line with what I expect. This is in line with who I am.
Do you think that Nike may have prejudged Steph Curry because of the reasons that a lot of people prejudged Steph Curry early on, his size? Because you talk about how they treated Kyrie Irving, who is a big point guard. You talk about how they treated Anthony Davis, who is a physical freak of nature. Do you think this is an instance of a sales team qualifying their client or their prospective client?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. And there's a great analogy in the sales world as well. You know, some companies, especially B2B companies, their biggest accounts didn't start off as their biggest accounts. And if you're looking at different opportunities and you're just looking at the size of it, you have to keep in mind the upside potential. You also have to keep in mind that your best account in the future might not look like your best account today. And Steph Curry didn't look like their other best accounts. He didn't look like Michael Jordan. And they weren't thinking about it with fresh eyes. They weren't looking at this as what could it become, because he was already doing pretty well at that point in time. Like, the leading indicators were there. Certainly Under Armour saw it and was willing to jump on the opportunity. But you got to keep an open mind, and it's not always, you know, yeah, the biggest player in the room that becomes the one that's going to carry your brand forward.
Russ, what are some of the lessons that sales teams and individual salespeople can learn from Nike's $14 billion mistake?
I mean, for the average salesperson, I think there's a really valuable lesson here, because it's easy to relate to how busy we all are and how we let things slip through the cracks. And when you're looking at a given deal, you can never take anything for granted. Let's say, you know, you're getting a deal towards the finish line. You just got like one more pitch, and this time they're bringing in the CEO of the company, and you're like, oh, I've already convinced everyone else in the company on this thing. Like, this is the last pitch. Go that extra mile, figure out who the CEO is, like, figure out their background, like, blow their socks off and get that deal done. Like, the deal's not done until the deal's done.
Great stuff from Russ there. You can check out more about his company at DocSend.com. Also read the full article on SalesHacker.com. So, Jennifer and Jeffrey, how does a multi-billion dollar company like Nike allow those small mistakes to happen and ruin a deal?
It wasn't a small mistake. It was fundamental selling one, not even 101. Number one is know your prospect and do the research that it takes. If you're going to offer somebody, which they were going to offer millions of dollars, correct? If they're going to offer millions of dollars, at least have his name right. At least have the fundamental things of what does he like.
Even if you were going to offer someone $5, why would you mess up their name if you're trying to get a sale? I mean, that's
because you're
crazy.
No, I will bet you that the people that negotiated that deal were neophytes. I will bet you that they were people that were trained by Nike on how to get a deal with somebody, but he wasn't top line. Like, they weren't negotiating with LeBron James. They were only negotiating with Steph Curry. So they took him for granted. And the minute you take somebody for granted, you lose.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally stupid. And I think that the world can learn a lesson, not just clothing companies or, you know, jersey companies or shoe companies, but everybody who's in the sales business right now. If you don't know your customer beyond your brand, you're going to lose. You think that just because you're Nike, you're going to win somebody? No, dude, that guy has to relate to you. Otherwise, there's choices. Everybody has a choice. You may think you have to go with Nike, but obviously Steph Curry said, up yours. I'm going to go with Under Armour. And he will build that brand the same way that Michael Jordan built Nike. And they're already a dominant brand in the marketplace.
Yeah, and the other lesson is treat every single prospect like they could be your best customer
right,
one day.
Like gold.
Exactly.
Everybody has to review that. Every sales meeting should start Monday morning with, why did Nike lose Steph Curry?
Or how not to be like Nike.
Yeah, I want to be like Nike. Okay, so I want to give a quick programming note. We're going to not be live next week, but we will have the full interview with Max Altshuler and more. So just make certain to subscribe to us. Come on. Go on iTunes or whatever app you use to get your podcasts and get your sales kick in the ass from Sell or Die next week.
And we want to hear from you in the next few weeks. So send us your
sales. Really, we don't want to
hear from
you. Yes, we do. No, no. Stay home, do nothing, lose sales.
Send us your sales questions, your dilemmas, your success stories,
your
comments about our show.
I'm not making any sales. The guy won't call me back on the phone. What do I do?
Come on, we'll answer it.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Tweet us at Twitter at Gittimer or at Jen in a New York Minute. It's actually just the state abbreviation. It looks like Jen in any minute. Or contact us by email at sellordie@gittimer.com. sellordie@gittimer.com, or on our weekly Wednesday morning post on reddit.com/r/sales.
Can you say that again?
Reddit rocks. reddit.com/r/sales.
Okay, cool.
This has been a fun show.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast.
We had some amazing people, by the
we
way.
Really
yeah,
did.
I really
yeah.
did.
Yeah, and I'm excited for next week with the full interview with Max because that is just incredible.
And you might want to look for a Max and Jeffrey and Jen public seminar in New York City coming up probably in September. We're going to rock New York City a little bit.
In the meantime, we're back next week at our regular time, Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie and come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
And I want to thank personally our guest, Russ Edelson, who was amazing from DocSend. You're going to love this app. It's phenomenal. Scott Hansen, the success hacker, and Max Altshuler, the sales hacker. Our producer is the great Doug Branson, whose Hive Talk Live podcast must be listened to, and our technical director, Chris Hill, who is dying to go home and eat. And
until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something. Sell until your ass falls off. Bye-bye.